From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 25th day of April, 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel, the senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County will be on the line to talk about the agricultural cash grain markets. As we close out the half hour, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with Chesapeake Energy from the 23rd floor of the Boeing building. That's in Chicago, Illinois. And along the way, we'll hear about the rise of glyphosate resistance and how it's causing farmers to rethink their weed control regimes, especially in these wet weather conditions. And it all happens right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
In Chicago on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day mostly higher. Nearby May wheat at $8.26, up 26 and a half. July, the harvest month at $8.61 and a quarter, 26 and a half higher as well. In Kansas City, the July hard red at $9.71 a bushel, 28 cents higher. May corn futures at $7.62 and a half, up 25 and a quarter. July at $7.68 and a half, 24 cents higher. September at $7.24, up 19 and three quarters. And December corn at $6.81 and a half, 16 cents higher. March contract at $6.89 and three quarters, up 16 and a half. May soybeans today, 9 cents higher at $13.89 and a half. July at $13.96 and a half, up 6 and three quarters. August beans at $13.94 and a half, up a nickel. And September futures, $13.88 and a quarter, up 3 cents. November at $13.82 and a half, unchanged on the day. May bean meal futures finished at $3.61.10, up $2.30. The May bean oil at $58.21, down 6 cents on the afternoon. April live cattle futures at $116.2 and a half, $2.37 and a half lower. June futures at $112.80, down $2.42 and a half. And the April feeders today down 14 and a half cents at $132.13. The May contract at $129.97 and a half, off the $3 limit. May lean hogs at $100.65, down $1.40. June futures there at $98.52.5, finished down $1.52.5 per 100 pounds. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, a land-grant university. You can join us online at willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. June crude oil futures at $112.18 a barrel, down 11 cents. Ethanol at $2.63 1/10. That's 4.5 cents higher. Natural gas at $4.38 2/10, down 3 cents. And the heating oil or diesel fuel off a penny and 7 cents at $3.18 1/10. And the gold contract at $1,508.60 an ounce, up $5.40. Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 12,480, just about 25 points lower. The dollar at 73.99, down 0.11. And the CRB index at 366.55. down 0.89 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for this afternoon. Showers likely in the Urbana-Champaign area. Cloudy, a high near 60 degrees. Northeast winds at about 9 miles an hour. The chance of precip this afternoon is 70%. Yet tonight should show us occasional showers and thunderstorms. Some of those storms could produce heavy rainfall. Lows this evening around 58 degrees. Northeast winds at 8 to 13. They'll become south-southeast, with a chance of precip set at 100% for the local area. Tuesday, a chance of showers before 1 o'clock. Cloudy, a high near 66. Southwest winds at 14 to 18. They'll gust as high as 21. The chance of precip tomorrow on Tuesday is 30%. Tuesday night, a 30% chance of showers continues. Mostly cloudy, a low 47. West winds at 6 to 13. And Wednesday, a 50% chance of showers. Cloudy, a high near 59 degrees. West-northwest winds at 8 to 13. Wednesday night, showers still in the forecast. Cloudy at 41. Thursday, mostly cloudy and breezy, a high near 59. Thursday night, cloudy, a low of 43. And Friday, mostly sunny. There it is, a high near 67 degrees. More on the ag weather when we get to the bottom of this half hour.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stewart-peterson.com.
And you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. On the phone line with us today to take a look at the agricultural futures markets, Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, where he serves as their senior grains analyst. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, another day up and rainfall in the Midwest. Were those two things related?
Boy, they were. They had the weather market bulls full force starting last night with continued, rain in the forecast. They keep trying to dry it out on the longer-term maps, but the main concern is we've got a ton of acres underwater, especially as you go south and up the Ohio River Valley, and there's not a whole lot of relief here over the next few days. And even if it would stop raining, we'll see several days, not a week or so, to dry out. Talking to some producers along the river there, they've already started the evacuation phase. Semis are in high demand, emptying some grain bins if they still have some left.
Mm-hmm.
Talked to a couple guys, lining up transportation to get that out of there, because last thing you want to do is have $7 corn underwater. And, it's a mess, and it's going to remain a mess here for a while, but tight old crop supplies has got the urgency to have a good growing season, and that's not the case. Even though you go back in history, last year we were 50% planted this time, but you go 2009, 2008, we were only 4-5% planted this time as a nation. So the urgency becomes more critical as we move more into mid-May. And the significance of 2 years ago, 2009, we had a record late getting in. We had record yields of 164.7, whatever it was. There's still time, but the trade's getting frustrated. And probably confirmation of the urgency here is you saw the corn market sharply higher, and you see the livestock market sharply lower. And that's the first time we've seen this big of a divergence here ever since last August when this market took off.
Yeah, essentially those two markets have been moving step in step, which is not usually the case, I suppose. Is that correct?
Well, correct. Typically, you've got concern of higher feed costs, and typically puts pressure, especially in the feeder market. And guys have been sort of negative to the feeder market since last fall because of the higher grain prices, but the strong demand for beef exports and the smaller cow herd we've had all over since the mid-50s has kept the meat market in it up here. But now that the urgency here is on the grain market's a little bit more serious, not here just but domestic and worldwide, we'll see if this follows through or not. It could be traders spreading their bet here in case we do get a dry forecast at some point in time.
Any reason you think a producer ought to take advantage of the premium built into the marketplace today?
We've been promoting to be a seller all along here, scale-up selling. We've had guys buy a ton of puts. They've lost 15, 20, 30 cents, but they made $2, $3, $4 on the other side. So it's been well worth that risk. We were optimistic clear back last August when corn got above $4. We said $6, and we got $6, we said $7. Then the hate mail came in because they didn't want to hear that because it sold out early. Now I'm in the cautious phase. It's hard to predict how high is. There's some ideas that maybe, corn can go on up above $8, but I prefer to play defense in here and continue to be, from a producer's point of view, a marketer and take advantage of these higher prices, yes.
Wouldn't you think the divergence in the livestock and the corn market is the start of a rationing process? Does that signal something like that? Or do we, and I know it's only one day, but is that something that you and the producer need to watch?
You're correct. That's a good observation, Todd, because before the rationing in the livestock sector was minor, and it was more of a tweaking of the feed rations, try and secure feed wheat and so forth and so on. So this might be the first real red flag here if it follows through. Some will say, well, we had higher placements on the cattle and feed report. Well, a lot of those placements were due to the hot, dry conditions in the southwest. You know, steers come to feed a lot a little sooner here due to the poor wheat conditions the ability to obtain grains a little bit better.
And I suppose we probably should stop and step back and think what that rationing process might look like, because at this point what it's really suggesting is that the available bushels of corn will be rationed rather than really the end user rationing. The end users are simply forced to ration because supply is not there. Is that right? Roughly speaking.
At some point in time.
Yeah.
Yeah. One other general observation, too, on the meat side, mm-hmm. is that when you look at the monthly meat report, I know we focus on grains, the overall per capita consumption has been going down. You know, we were over 60 pounds, 61, 62, now we're down about 57 or so. So that suggests that meat demand here in the U.S. could be slowing also, too, and that's been offset by our export market, though.
Absolutely. But as usual, the markets trade again tonight and tomorrow, and things could change quickly.
Oh, man. Yes, it's a dynamic roller coaster. The key is it's in the hands of the weatherman, so definitely the weather guys is going to get the play here. And as you know, there'll be some more weather maps out this evening. So it's one of these markets where guys will be checking the markets at all hours of the night.
All right. Well, good luck and stay up and take all those phone calls.
Very good.
All right. Thanks much. That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us here on the closing market report on a Monday afternoon. He mentioned the weathermen, and we'll have the weather folks, meteorologist, on with us in just a few minutes here, not too very far away now. We'll talk with the folks at Chesapeake Energy. They're up on the 23rd floor of the Boeing building in Chicago, Illinois. And we'll try to give us an update on what the weather forecast and current conditions might be like across the Midwest and where the floodwaters may be coming out of the banks of many of those rivers. That all coming up in about 10 or 12 minutes. So stay with us on the closing market report on this Monday afternoon. You can always pick us up online if you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our programming from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with today's agricultural news.
Support for the closing market report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In agricultural news, representatives of the biofuels industry say they are anticipating legislation that would roll back the amount of advanced biofuels required by the Renewable Fuels Standard in the 2007 energy law. The Renewable Fuels Standard, set in the Energy Independence and Security Act of 2007, requires the nation's motor fuel supply to include 36 billion gallons of ethanol or other renewable fuel by 2022, including 21 billion gallons of advanced biofuels made from municipal solid waste and other sources. Mike McAdams, president of the Advanced Biofuels Association, says there appears to be an effort underway, led by the National Petrochemical and Refiners Association, to reduce that target. Representative Duncan Hunter, a Republican from California, is circulating a draft congressional letter to Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood opposing proposed plans for cross-border trucking operations with Mexico in line with U.S. obligations under the North American Free Trade Agreement. The draft letter says in part, based on the recently released details by the Department of Transportation, we have concerns that this proposed program could impact the safety of our roads and may create a security breach along our southern border. The cross-border trucking program would implement NAFTA trucking provisions that have been stalled for years because of safety concerns. Under the proposal, participating Mexican carriers and drivers would be required to comply with all applicable U.S. laws and regulations. OPEC members with spare capacity are ready to pump above degree limits if there is a need, but the producer group is unlikely to formally change output targets at a meeting in June. OPEC last formally discussed output policy in December and is not scheduled to do so again until June. Members have ruled out holding an emergency meeting before then. Even though governments and consumer countries are facing domestic pressure because of high fuel prices. Iraqi's oil minister today says that a world oil price of $120 a barrel is reasonable and acceptable. The minister goes on to say that we in OPEC see that this price will not affect economic growth. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, both programs that you can find on our website anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Now up next, you know the rise of glyphosate resistance is causing farmers to rethink their weed control methods. I'll have more in a moment on the return of the soil residual herbicide. Roundup Ready soybeans appeared on the market in the mid-1990s. They'd been modified in a way to withstand Roundup herbicide. Active ingredient, glyphosate. A glyphosate killed most of the weeds in a soybean field. A decade and a half of intense use of the product has changed that fact. Some weeds are now glyphosate resistant, and Illinois Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager says it means farmers are returning to soil residual herbicides for season-long weed control. That's how it used to be done, and he has some tips from the past for this season.
Product selection really represents the matching the correct product to the needs of a particular field. Not all products would fit on every acre that a farmer may have. For example, if they're looking for something to help them control a large seeded species like giant ragweed as compared with a small seeded species like some of the pigweed or amaranthus species, a lot of times their product choices would be different. We need one to really match up to whatever the most problematic species that the farmer is really targeting, and then try to match up either a single active ingredient or perhaps a premix that has two or more active ingredients on these individual acres.
The timing of the application is important, too, because it impacts how long into the season the residual herbicide will work. Hager says the most effective timing is either 2 weeks before or after planting, as long as the rate of application is properly made.
The challenge of some of these lower rate applications of a residual product lies in the fact that with some of the types of resistance that we have now, and in particular in water hemp species in Illinois, in soybean in particular, we may not have an effective post-emergent herbicide option. So the question of rate also works into the length of residual control later into the season, with higher rates typically lasting longer.
That's as long as it makes its way into the soil profile. Rainfall, and sometimes tillage, is an important part of a soil residual herbicide application.
If we had to write a prescription, so to speak, of an ideal amount and timing of precipitation, in general, we would think if we were able to get about a half inch to an inch of moisture within maybe 7 to 10 days after application, That would be about as good of a scenario as we could come up with.
But one that, like much having to do with the farm, is not a controllable factor. A rain event that provides less than a suitable amount of water or that comes too late will cause the soil residual herbicide to underperform. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
Listening to Illinois Public Media and the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. On the phone line with us to take a look at the cash grain market from the Andersons from right here in Champaign County is Greg Johnson. Good afternoon to you, Greg. How are you?
Good afternoon, Todd. I'm doing well.
Well, is this the start of something new today in the marketplace, do you think?
I don't know if it's a start. I think it's a continuation, and until the weather forecast changes, traders are going to be extremely nervous about, and farmers too for that matter, about getting too much new crop corn sold just in case we don't get in the field for 3 or 4 weeks.
In the area that you have 3 or 4 weeks, in the area that you have been pulling from for the Andersons there, what are they talking about in number of weeks, number of days, with the amounts of rainfall that have come and what's predicted over the next several days?
It would be next week at the earliest. This week is pretty well shot, and depending on how quickly it warms up and how much rain we get in the next shot of rain towards the middle to end of this week, we may be able to get in the fields sometime next week, but the 6 to 10 day maps are talking about above normal precip, and normal precip is 1 inch every week during May. So if we get above normal, if we get 2 inches next week, that's going to keep us out of the field for another week. So somehow we just have to miss one of these forecasted rains.
that's
easier said than done, right?
Yeah, that's easier said than done. And you don't hear often people say, let's miss a rain. That's not something that you want to do very often, but at this time of year, it looks like we need to miss one of those. What's the marketplace looking like from your perspective in terms of basis?
Two things there. The delayed planting obviously is having an impact on overall price, moving it higher, basis levels as well as futures, because farmers are becoming tighter holders of what little old crop corn is left. The other thing is we're seeing old crop corn gain on new crop corn because we were thinking that some early planted corn would be available to fill that late August, early September time frame need. Now that looks like that may not be quite as plentiful of a supply since we're not getting the corn planted. So old crop corn prices are going to have to stay higher longer to make sure that some of that demand gets moved over from old crop to new crop. So impacting both the spread and the overall price.
Will they have to stay higher too?
Yes. Yes.
I kind of thought so. What's your bids for the day?
Cash corn, $7.54. New crop, $6.49. Cash beans are $13.77. New crop, $13.47. And new crop wheat, $8.21.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Thank you, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Somebody from that office joins us each and every Monday afternoon on the Closing Market Report to take a look at the cash grain market. I'll be back in 2 minutes when we will talk about the weather and the forecast with the folks at Chesapeake Energy. They're in Chicago, Illinois, up on the 23rd floor of the Boeing building.
It's National Zucchini Bread Day. The first records of zucchini in the U.S. date back to the early 1920s. It was almost certainly brought over by Italian immigrants and probably first emerged in the U.S. in California. It's also St. Mark's Day, patron of cattle breeders. On this day in agricultural history in 1744, Anders Celsius died. Celsius was a Swedish astronomer, physicist, and mathematician who is famous for the temperature scale he developed. Celsius's fixed scale for measuring temperature defines 0 degrees as the temperature at which water freezes, and 100 degrees as the temperature at which water boils. The scale, an invented form of Celsius's original design, was adopted as a standard and is still used in almost all scientific work. And in 1959, the St. Lawrence Seaway opened. It connects the Great Lakes with the Atlantic Ocean. Its completion opened the heart of America's industrial and agricultural areas to ocean-going vessels for shipping. The Seaway begins in Montreal to Lake Erie and ultimately to the Atlantic. The waterway was completed over a period of 5 years at a cost of $1 billion. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Listening to the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. Josh Darr from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago joins us to take a look at the weather forecast. Thanks for being with us, Josh. Start out with the rainfall we've had, how much, where, and who's going to get flooded.
Yeah, the storms over the past 7 days were just a taste of what's coming again later this week with lots of areas across the Midwest seeing 3/4 of an inch on the low side across most areas, out to 3 and 4 inches across some of the heavier amounts across the belt. And the heavier areas so far have been central Illinois and then the southern parts of the Midwest, the Ohio River Valley in particular. That's where we've seen even higher totals, 4 inches, 7 inches, some isolated 9-10 inch amounts over the past 7 days. Looking ahead to what's coming down the pike, we have a storm system that's cranking up across the plains, severe weather right now across parts of the southern U.S. That is going to push north over the next 48 hours. Rains coming into, tonight across much of the central parts of the Midwest, Iowa, Illinois, lasting through tomorrow. That's going to be a widespread half-inch up to 2-inch producer with isolated heavier totals. Again, you'd bias those areas farther south. So the areas that got inundated last week, again, the Ohio River Valley, southern portion of the Midwest, are in line to get the heaviest totals, and then further east up into Ohio and Michigan. And so that's the big storm producer this week. We go a little bit calmer for a couple days, get in a southerly flow by the weekend, but a front comes through on Sunday. That's the next rain producer. And then beyond that, Todd, it's just it's a pretty fast flow out of the Pacific, which means more storm systems as we end April, get into May. Bottom line, we don't see a real hard transition to a warmer, drier pattern for the next couple weeks.
I was across the Mississippi River on Easter Sunday. It looked awfully high. I suspect there'll be floodwaters in much of the Ohio Valley and down through the Mississippi Valley, too.
Yeah, and most notably, certainly south of St. Louis and the entire Ohio River Valley is going to be cresting here later this week on top of what they've seen and what they're going to get over the next 48 hours. Certainly, it'll be one of the more memorable periods in recent years for high floodwaters on the Mississippi. It will disrupt transportation, all those associated issues. So this is a wet pattern. It'll be interesting to see when April is all said and done, which states in the Midwest may become in the top 5 wettest Aprils of all time. And that's the type of level of wetness we're dealing with.
Anything around the globe that we need to be keeping track of other than right here in the United States?
Two quick areas. China has continued to disappoint on rainfall prospects, and their winter wheat acreage has been very dry this spring, so that's an area we continue to watch closely. Europe, too. France, Germany, their winter crop belt. They see some minor rainfall the next 10 days, but it's not a lot, and they've had an awfully dry spring, too. So lots of wheat areas to watch across the globe over the next several weeks.
Josh, thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it.
Josh Darr is with Chesapeake Energy. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. on a Monday afternoon. If you'd like to hear what Josh has to say again, you can do that on our website at willag.org, or you can dial this number, 217-333-3434. Actually, not to hear Josh, but hear what Kirk Kimmel had to say again. We post at 10:15 and 3:15, either the opening or the closing market numbers, and a bit of analysis each and every business day. It's all part of the service brought to you by willag.org. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.